Only at True North stores. New True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It's a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Listen and follow Jill on Money on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know what I think is harder to imagine? Ric Flair outlived them all.
Yeah, and I think they all went a little hard, to be honest.
No, I'm sure this is hard living.
Like,
there's obviously decades of steroid abuse, but on top of that, it's like Flair was, like, Flair does not exist. Like, if you look up clean living, Ric Flair wasn't living the dream.
No, the documentary that he did, when they were talking about him, he's like, I was talking to the doctor, and he goes, well, how much do you drink? And he goes, well, I have about 12 beers during the day. And he goes, and then what? And he goes, well, then I go to vodka.
Yeah.
And then what? And he goes, well, then I go back to beers to calm down at the end of the night. And he goes, and how often do you do this? He goes, every day. And he never missed a workout. And the movie about the Von Erichs, the Iron Claw, about, you know, which came out, which was fantastic, I thought. I watched that last year on an overseas flight, where he's fighting Kerry Von Erich, in one of those things. And he walks in, he goes, man, the guy playing Ric Flair, you Von Erichs are some crazy, you know what. And he goes, by the way, where can somebody get tanked around here?
Yeah.
Like, he's just looking for the first bar.
What's the closest one? Yeah.
Jim Ross was telling the story during it. He goes, you know, I always just wanted to hang out with Ric Flair, you know, his real name. He goes, but he could never turn it off. We couldn't just go have a beer at the bar. We couldn't just go have a drink.
Yeah, he had to be Ric Flair. Yeah.
He had to be Ric Flair. And he goes, as evident, we walked into a hotel bar in Kansas City, and next thing I know, he's ordering 137 kamikazes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, excuse me? Like, as a bartender, I would have been like, 137. Okay, it's going to take me about 10 minutes, but...
Yeah, hold on. I'm going to go get a bucket to mix this.
Yeah, I'm going to get a bucket, and I'm going to think there's going to be probably 28 in a bottle, so I'm going to need 4 bottles of this and that, and just give me a second, and I'll just start scooping them up and chilling them up and firing them out as fast as I can, buddy. Just don't put the figure four on me.
Let me go back to the kitchen and get a pot, and then I'll come and mix it up that way, yeah.
And it's so wild what the wrestling circuit was back then. Obviously, you guys growing up in Memphis, and the people in Memphis know how important Memphis wrestling was to them. Growing up in California, I mean, we were either watching the NWA on TBS on Saturdays and Sundays, and then they became WCW, or we watched, you know, the WWE, and it was syndicated, and, you know, it was the kind of the cartoony, like, WWE, where Hulk Hogan was it. I mean, everybody, kids were leg dropping their little brothers left and right, but, you know, you had the Horsemen and the NWA, and they were so different, and, you know, there was always the magazine articles. But anybody that's of my age range, which, you know, I'm about to turn 53, that grew up in the 80s, I mean, Hulk Hogan was a part of our growing up. The cartoons, the first WrestleMania, the WrestleMania with Andre the Giant, the Wrestling Buddies. I mean, everybody had something. And people forget, he really broke through mainstream when he was in Rocky III, when he played Thunderlips. And people are like, this dude is truly a monster. Like, he's a large, enormous human being. And
that's what we learned today. So Jeff and I, when we got the news, we were like looking up. He got the name The Hulk when he was working in the territory here.
Yeah.
He was sitting in
the Golden Hulk or something like that.
He was sitting on a stage and on a local talk show, and Lou Ferrigno was the guest. and somebody made a comment about the Hulk that was sitting behind the Hulk.
Right.
And then he changed his name to the Hulk the next night, and like, so it was born.
Yeah, I mean, that's wild. And just the roads those guys took, and the number of nights on the road, and all of the things. And, you know, look, he had a band, too. Like, he played music.
He played fretless bass.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah, he was just the impact he's had on society, and literally then moving forward into all those, you know, the years where wrestling really took off. Him turning heel is literally one of the greatest storylines in any type of entertainment that's obviously scripted. I mean, people just were sideswiped. Nobody saw that coming.
My Hulk was Hollywood.
Yeah, and he just went there, and then it was like, I for one was like, okay, now this is awesome.
I mean, this was brilliant television.
Now this is fun. And, you know, look, he embraced guys and you know, also kind of made guys have to work for it. He was the icon. He and Flair were the guys. And, you know, a lot of those guys that are making piles of money now, you know, have a lot to be thankful for from those guys. So hard to read that news this morning. I wasn't sure if I was getting duped.
No, that's the thing. It's like, I feel like all the stories now, everything's like, you just got to have your head on a swivel. And then Malcolm Jamal Warner dying this week.
Wow. I didn't hear that.
Yeah, no, he drowned. Like, ugh.
Ugh.
And then everyone's like, well, Ozzy.
Theo.
So, I was like, I think Ozzy still hit the over, too.
Yeah. Theo Huxtable, man, with the Gorton Gartrell shirt that Lisa Bonet tried to make one for him. That was also an iconic episode of television. So just little trips down memory lane. And then, you know, look, it's why you look back and we have all the nostalgia we do, because we remember the good times.
All right, my man, we appreciate it.
Talk to you guys next week.
That is Eric Hasseltine, Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. We come back, we'll get into the list. We'll do that next. Jason Smith also coming up during hour number two. Stick around and listen to Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Jason Smith coming up at the bottom part of the hour, but before we do any of that, let's get into the list. North Carolina. All right, we'd mentioned this at the top of the first hour that there is a Sports Business Journal report today that says North Carolina is exploring options and trying to leave the ACC for the SEC. So I told Cobb that my hypothesis on this news was this is North Carolina trying to jump the line. And what I actually think is fascinating about this is if indeed they are, I think there's a couple of things here. I think Cobb posed a great question to start, which is, does the SEC have a number in mind of this is the amount of teams we want? And I think the other question would be, how active is the Big Ten going to be in pursuit? Because what we've been watching is when usually one goes after some people, the other does too. Now, I guess the SEC would make it clear that Cobb, they've not extended invitations. They are not pursuing any school. I always love when that. It's like, oh, really? So Oklahoma and Texas just knew to ask for an invite? Like, they just knock on the door, say, hey, who's home?
Like, I would say, like, North Carolina has to have been given at least some tea leaf that indicates to them, all right, if things were to shake out in a certain type of way, yeah, we would kick the tires on you.
Yeah, so I think the tell of that was when the ACC finally got the litigation solved. Was that back earlier this spring?
Yeah.
When they got the litigation solved and they figured out, okay, here's the cost, like in 2030, 31, here's the cost of what it would take to get out. So once you got that done, okay, well, now all of a sudden there was clarity, because I do think for a while the SEC and the Big Ten did not have a desire to get involved in the, hey, man, let's start like actively pursuing some schools and not really knowing like what the litigation impact is. I think both leagues were kind of like, hey, y'all figure that out and then, I don't know, maybe call our office and ask for so-and-so. Like, I can see where that happened. Now, what I actually find interesting about this is that I think it seems likely this news was leaked by North Carolina, And this is what was also interesting to me, Cobb. This feels like this news was leaked right after North Carolina got done speaking at ACC Media Days.
Yeah, you wouldn't want old Bill up there fielding questions about the future conference home of the North Carolina Tar Heels. Although I guess if you were afraid he was going to get asked questions about his 24-year-old girlfriend, like maybe that could be a good distraction.
Well,
but
Bill,
as you mentioned, they
did you see Bill
put that behind him.
Bill went back to the well. Somebody asked him a fullback question, and he did like the 20 minutes on fullbacks.
That's fantastic.
So like Bill used to always famously, like if somebody would ask like a deep snapper question, like he'd have like a 20-minute rehearsed speech on the beauty of deep snapping. They went to fullback, so he was able to avoid that. But the reason why I mention all this is this to me feels like if you're North Carolina, you might be worried in the same way that I applaud Memphis for trying to get in front and trying to like skip the lines, being like, hey, let's see if we can get in now. This to me feels like the move of you're a little bit worried that if we don't make our intentions known now, maybe we either are left out or you wind up in the same spot. Like maybe you don't have as many suitors as you think, or
well,
you're at least concerned.
What's going to be interesting is to see sort of how much they account for television ratings in the SEC in evaluating North Carolina. Because as we were talking about earlier, UNC football is going to be watched at a much higher level these next couple of seasons with Bill Belichick as the head coach than they ever have been before or probably ever will be in the ACC without him.
Well, also, what if that's related?
I mean, honestly,
what if you're saying like, hey, we know this is going to be like we sold out our tickets because they make sure to announce that. And this will probably be our most watched season. Like, hey, we want you to judge us on that.
More so than the wins and losses.
Right.
I think that's a valid point. So if you're power ranking, Jeffrey, if you're the SEC, if you're Greg Sankey and you're looking at maybe expanding by two teams because you want to match the Big Ten's total of 18, and you're looking primarily at the ACC because where else would you look? How would you power rank ACC teams in terms of their desirability for coming over to the SEC?
Okay, so let's be clear also what actually probably will drive this more than anything. It's going to be ESPN working in concert with the SEC because what I think the SEC likes to do, they like to make it clean, and they like it to kind of be, come on in, you're a member. I think
well, that's the awkward part about this is ESPN has the rights to both conferences. So they can kind of pull these levers however they want to engineer the outcome that they desire here because they could say, all right, we're just going to go to heck with the ACC, load up the SEC with their best brands, make this one big mega package, whatever, and then we'll pay for whatever basketball scraps are left in the ACC. And then, or they could look at it the other way. They could say, well, we want a healthy ACC and a healthy SEC because, I don't know, that's better inventory for us if North Carolina is still in the ACC playing Duke and we put that basketball game on TV twice a year. We don't want to lose that. So we're going to give the ACC a sweeter TV deal to try to keep them healthy and whole too.
Or you could look at it this way. ESPN can navigate the properties that they actually desire. And if there's enough turmoil and if there's enough exit, hey, instead of paying, let's see what, ACC schools, I think, get $36 million each.
Right.
So what? I think it's probably $500 million a year, something like that. Like, let's say, like, on that's the yearly rate. All right. Instead of, if the conference, like, if there's so much turmoil, the conference doesn't exist, well, I'm not having to pay $500, and I was able to navigate the teams that I cared about. Maybe I'll tack on, I think, what is it, about $60 million, I think, per school for the SEC.
Right. So now you have all the brands that you
correct.
Want at a lower total price.
Correct.
Time. You have a little bit less inventory to throw on the plus. You lose out on Tobacco Road, but if you get some more good football games that are going to, you know, fill up your inventory, then, I mean, that's kind of the
I'm probably the saving money happens. Dissolving the ACC network. Like, I'm kind of out from underneath that. I mean, that's a little bit more like Machiavellian to think about. But I think this is the interesting question, because what are they going to value? Where Carolina, I think, has an advantage, because if you're just thinking purely football, it's like, well, that's probably not top of mind. But what Carolina does offer is your television network studios are in Charlotte, so you're even closer there. And while North Carolina is SEC adjacent, it is technically still a new market. And yes, we are not talking about the era in which Missouri and A&M get added to the SEC, because that's all largely just driven by number of cable boxes. It's still not nothing. You're still going to add new additional revenue if you get the SEC networks in state in more homes. So that matters more. Then it becomes the question of, okay, are we looking to, is there like a perfect number that they would get to? And I think their answer would be this, that they would never say on the record. Well, the answer is, how many teams does ESPN want to pay for at a full share? Because I do think the SEC somewhat values not having to do the half share thing, or the partial share.
I think North Carolina would probably be a team that gets a full share. A program.
Do we also think, so once upon a time, John Skipper, noted North Carolina alum, like, I've always wondered how much of North Carolina and the ESPN relationship was that. I think the answer is Florida State. I am unclear, though. I think the answer is Florida State, but I'm unclear if, like, are you really going to take Florida State and leave Clemson?
Yeah, I would view them as comparable. They're both football first.
I mean, I guess it should be noted that the Sports Business Journal report included Clemson alongside North Carolina. But again, to Cobb's point, we knew that. My only question was that a tip of, is that a tip of how ESPN views the properties?
Yeah, so what could happen, what would be interesting, is if the SEC picks off a couple, then a couple of more don't want to be a part of a sinking ship and go beg the Big Ten to let them in under the same terms that Oregon and Washington got into the Big Ten, which is a reduced share. And then the Big 12.
It was basically half. I can't remember if it was 5 years. I want to say it was maybe half, and then potentially when they got the new deal, they could be full.
All right, so 10 years from now, here's what it is. You got North Carolina, and we'll say Florida State in the SEC.
All right, so then that gets them to 18.
Yeah. Yeah, so you got eight. You would have 18 in the SEC. But then the Big Ten says, well, if the ACC's falling apart, then we'll take Clemson and Miami. And then the Big 12 says, well, we already have a foothold in Appalachia. Let's go get Virginia Tech. Let's add Louisville, too. They're a natural rival with Cincinnati. And then you've got the carcass that's left of, like, Syracuse, Pitt, Georgia Tech, NC State, Boston College, and
did you say Pitt?
Yeah, and then you Wake, and then hey, Memphis, you interested?
Did we say NC State?
Yeah, so that, I mean, I can see that. I mean, it's obviously so far down the road; these things are impossible to predict. But the indications are today, like, North Carolina is not going to be long for that league, and once those dominoes start to fall, they're going to fall fast, and it could be a very similar fate to what befell the Pac-12, which is basically, your members get divided up among the other leagues that want to take them. And then, you know, you have to backfill from there. The Pac-12 is finally getting around to doing that. I would rather be a part of the ACC's backfill if I'm Memphis, though, than I would be a part of the Pac-12's backfill.
No, I
think that's what this all comes down to.
Okay, now let's ask this question, because I think I'm with you. The hesitation for me, did we say Syracuse? I think we forgot Syracuse.
They're in there.
Okay. So my question, though, is I have real concerns about a lot of these ACC schools in this era, because I'm just not convinced all these schools are really down with the whole, like, we're going to rev share as much as possible. And I get it. A lot of these schools might have legitimate concerns and whatnot. The only thing I would say about the PAC is I do think the schools that are in there are committed to being as good as possible in sports. I understand that there are other complications. But I think the real question is, what is left of the ACC? Because if indeed your suspicion is correct, the ACC is able to pick off, the Big 12 is able to pick off, let's say, Louisville and
Virginia Tech.
Let's say Vitek. Let's also say, like, I think people are really overestimating Duke in this. Like, I think Duke could be kind of left, like, in this awkward, like, what's our home? And the Big 12 has been committed to, we have no problem being as good of a basketball conference as we want.
Yeah, I can see that.
Like, that makes some sense to me. Then you have this weird, okay, what is everybody doing with Stanford and Cal? Because
they just need to disband. Hey, just hang it up. You guys had a good run. You had your band on the field. You know, that was fun.
The ultimate irony to me would be they were so high and mighty about not joining that version of the Pac-12. Like, if there actually was a scenario where their pompous asses wound up having to just, like, that's their only home, that would be hilarious to me.
Just give it up. I'm being dead serious. In this day and time, Cal and Stanford have participating.
I think the problem with Stanford is Stanford really does hang their hat on the whole.
Oh, sure. Yeah. You can keep your swimming and diving program, but the football thing, it ain't happening, man. Y'all haven't been to an NCAA men's basketball tournament in at least a decade. I mean, the last time they were relevant, the Lopez twins were on the team, and those dudes are pushing 40. Cal football has a good coach in Justin Wilcox, but
They lost. I think they lost their top 10 ball carriers, to which, hand up, did not realize you could have 10 guys with that many carries, but they lost their top 10.
Including Jaden Ott to Oklahoma, the star running back.
Like they lost every one of their good players is gone.
And then they're bringing in Ron Rivera to be their GM. I mean, they're a joke. They're a laughingstock. I mean, Stanford post Jim Harbaugh. I mean, David Shaw kept it going there for a little while, did a lot with not much. But now it's an absolute comedy right now. They fired Troy Taylor. They found a reason to fire him. They've given the keys of their program to Andrew
Luck. They fired Troy Taylor after Luck had to go out and say, we've looked into it, he's going to be the coach. And then they had to come back and be like, never mind.
It's those programs have no business being part of the future of high level college football. Let them keep their swimming teams and all that. I mean, they're huge. I mean, where would we be as an Olympic nation without Cal and Stanford? Obviously, like, you know, we need them to keep producing swimmers. But I mean, the football, the men's basketball thing, it's been over. It's been over for them. So, I mean, they can go do whatever they want to, but. I mean, yeah, that's my 10 years down the road outlook on the ACC is that the SEC maybe gets its first pick, then the Big Ten lets a few in at a discount, then the Big 12 is chomping at the bit for a few that it feels like fits their mojo, and then the ACC is looking around saying, all right, if we want to continue to exist, we're going to the American, and let's hope South Florida and Tulane and Memphis hadn't gone to the Pac-12.
Is there any scenario in your mind where they could be – Could they take some Big 12 teams?
Oh, yeah, that would be fascinating, right? You know what's interesting going into this football season? This idea that the Big 12 is, it's the parity-filled conference, and they've got a lot of money being thrown around.
Cobb, it's the deepest conference in football.
Yeah, and it's like, all right, like, Texas Tech spending like crazy and all this, but, like, have you looked at the national title odds? I mean, there are three ACC teams that actually have really good odds at making the playoffs, decent odds at winning the national title, and then there are, I would say, no Big 12 teams that I would even remotely consider betting on to win the national title. Yet, for whatever reason, the perception is that the Big 12 is on firmer footing than the ACC. The reality is, though, if the ACC were to start to lose members, a good commissioner would go after Big 12 schools. An aggressive commissioner would go after Big 12 schools. Jim Phillips, PhD, is not that. He's the old stuffy academic guy. He's
you mean
like
his
a
DNA?
Commissioner from, he's a commissioner from 30 years ago. I mean, he's from the wrong era. Brett Yormark came from whatever, Rock Nation Entertainment, putting on concerts at Madison Square
Agent
Garden.
Agent marketing, yeah. Events,
he doesn't
live events.
Care at all, like about your academic credentials, the student athlete welfare. I mean, whatever. It's a business, and that's what it is. Brett Yormark sees that. Jim Phillips does not.
No, I mean that would be it. Would be interesting to me because I do worry that there's a version of this gutted ACC that I don't know what the value of it is. Now, I think it's better than the American. But yes. I do think you could wind up in this scenario, and this has been the problem with the pack, and we'll ask Jason about this. There's this scenario, like, I think competitively, doesn't everybody agree the better football league would be the pack?
Well, if it's as hollowed out in the ACC as we've
discussed. I'm saying compare the pack to the American.
It's a better league in football and basketball.
But the problem is, it doesn't pay like it.
It doesn't pay like it, and it's just an absolute nightmare to get to
correct.
Corvallis and Pullman and Fort Collins, and I just, you know, financially, it just doesn't make any
correct.
Sense.
All right, so let's ask Jason, like, because I do think this is part of it for Memphis. It's like, how do you game theory out how these pieces wind up on a chessboard and what makes the most sense for you as Memphis. So we'll discuss that when we come back right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
StreetEasy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It's a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Listen and follow Jill on Money on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jason Smith is the co-host of the Jason and John Show weekdays right here on 92.9 FM ESPN from 11 until 2. Follow him on Twitter on X at Jason Smith 929. Jason, did the University of Memphis start a trend and did they start another round of realignment?
Maybe the trend part in terms of, hey, we better get on this, be proactive. And, you know, if we have to be desperate to do it, and I guess in North Carolina's way, maybe buy its way into the SEC. I don't know. I know Memphis didn't start the trend, but we all can see it. And maybe, you know, maybe even places that we once thought were part of the promised land, like the ACC, that's what we see. We see that ground crumbling, that foothold sort of crumbling. When you see these reports, you know, everything looked like it was going to be calm till at least 2030 when these, exit fees drop from what, 90 something million to 75 million for the ACC. But
I think if someone were to leave now, Cobb, I think it's like 170,
90.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe. So yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the year before that 2030, 31 season, it's
75
from 90 to 75.
Yeah.
That's when most have said that could be where the shakeup happens again. Maybe North Carolina pays the increased rate. Maybe it doesn't, maybe it waits till then. But, what's obvious is that everybody's scared that the Big Ten and the SEC are going to have all the power, which all arrows point to right now as it is. And you want to get in it and not get left, including if you are, you know, some of those ACC, you know, powers, traditional powers. I mean, that's where we're talking. And Memphis didn't start that. But, yes, Memphis being, you know,
just super open about getting out there. And this is a, I mean, you know, I was listening to you on this. I think you're exactly right. Two different situations again, where Memphis didn't, you don't want this offer out there if you knew the way it was going to be received. Whereas with North Carolina, that's them. This certainly would seem like it's coming from them. And so, you know, same agenda, get out, you know, get out of where you're currently at and get into a bigger conference. But for North Carolina, it's about getting to the what could be the real promised land, especially if Big Ten and SEC break completely off.
Yeah. So, Jason, I saw you guys had Mr. Paul Feinbaum on there yesterday, and he was not too kind to Brett Yormark. But my interpretation of the Big 12's rejection was that it was more about the presidents than it was Brett Yormark saying, no, we're not interested. But kind of enlighten me on your perspective on that, and then if you don't mind, what was sort of Paul's view on the whole situation?
He placed it at the feet of Yormark. Now, again, you know, Paul doesn't think very highly of Brett, and it's probably easy to do because he's kind of, he's been a critic of Yormark for a long time. I came into that interview believing what you did, that it's ultimately the presidents and the television execs that are actually kind of making the calls. Now, Paul came at it from a different, and Lord knows Paul's going to know more about these things than me, but I had kind of come from where you're at. And particularly when it's the, you know, the presidents, and there was a quote in that story from an administrator about, okay, well, how much has Memphis really changed since we vetted it? You know, that view of Memphis really hasn't done anything. Memphis hasn't changed in the 4 or 5 years. Right. That's to me what was dangerous about all of this. Right. If they're not even really looking at you and this is out there, boy, how is, you know, how embarrassing, yes, is that for Memphis? But this idea that you were misled. Right. Bill Hargrave's smart man. Ed Scott's a smart those guys, and especially Hargrave, who the report was, had been doing this, you know, this footwork for 14 months, meeting with presidents, meeting with ADs, you know. To be that fooled that you thought because again the offer wouldn't have been made and extended unless you thought it was going to go over well. And so I have a hard time believing that those smart people here in Memphis working on behalf of Memphis for as long as they did got that fooled again when that was essentially the case years ago with Tom Bowen. I had wondered if Yormark, who has been to Memphis, who at one time fancied, hey, let's open up our minds and look at UConn and these others, you know, and had been that guy that's even looking at it through a basketball prism and had talked about that publicly. I had just wondered if Yormark had been a part of the sort of what had to be a misleading of Memphis about how much, you know, how many presidents they would have in terms of trying to get a vote on this. They didn't even get it. So again, if you're in the room with these, you know, somebody had to mislead Memphis in this part. I mean, they obviously were put in a position where they thought this was further along than it was. And I've always kind of looked at Yormark as maybe one of those guys, as opposed to Yormark as the guy that killed it. Again, Feinbaum looked at it the other way. But perhaps Feinbaum, not, you know, SEC is what he's privy to. Perhaps he wasn't privy to these negotiations and has no idea whether Yormark is the one who killed it or if he was the one that sort of fanned the flames for Memphis. Hey, yeah, make this offer. Let's see where we're at. I have no idea how that played. It'd be interesting to see how that played out. I wonder if we'll ever know.
That's a good
by Memphis, frankly. Yeah. And if I don't have any traction from the ACC and, you know, Big 12, I mean, Big East in a split with a Pac-12, you know, I'd like to kind of get my story out there at some point. Memphis, very, very – Memphis lately, and obviously they've been able to get a lot of work done behind the scenes. It didn't do them a lot of good. But Memphis lately has been operating much like the Grizzlies, where they aren't saying much of anything. At one point, Ed Scott had told local media, hey, I'm going to – you know, let's wait till this house settlement, want to come out and talk. And he did do – there was a presser, I think, about Simmons Bank and how far along they were. But he really hasn't answered many more questions than that. And I would want my story out there at this point when it's this transparent, because, you know, the way this was taken, you couldn't even get it to a vote. It's made you look. It hasn't been the best look for Memphis. Although, I mean, I think you have to, Cobb. That's a long-winded answer. You got to give Memphis a lot of credit for how ambitious they were. You know, what they were trying to get done. We know how urgent this is, and you know, they gave it a shot, but boy, were they seemingly misled. You don't make that offer unless you think you're further along, and they clearly weren't.
My read on the situation was, I don't think Yormark necessarily misled Memphis. I can envision a world where Yormark maybe misread the situation, which is probably equally as at fault. Like, that's, I'm not absolving him, but I really think he thought that this offer, like, when you're constantly hearing from your member institutions, money, money, money. All right, I just came up with a plan that gets you $200 million of, and Cobb and I talked about this, clean money. This is not private equity money. This is corporate money from FedEx, from AutoZone, from Lowe's. These are publicly traded, well-respected brands. Like, I can see a world where he thought this proposal would have been a slam dunk, and all of a sudden it wasn't. Like, that's where I think you could maybe say he's at fault. I really find it hard to believe that, like, he was really just trying to pull one on Memphis.
Oh, no. When I said misled, don't take that as intentional, that Yormark clearly was out to mislead Memphis and embarrass. When I say misled, that's precisely what I'm saying, Jeffrey, what you just did. Misinformed, misled, those presidents are saying one thing to him, and then behind his back, they're calling him a clown and deciding what they're going to do. When I say misled, yes, not intentional, or to hang Memphis out to dry, why would he possibly want to do that? It's he was uninformed and in being so misled Memphis into, hey, let's go do this. That's what I mean by that. It's precisely what you're saying, yes. And in that form, being misinformed, you did still mislead Memphis.
No, for sure.
Whether Memphis should have had that trust in you, if this is the way it went, if this is the scenario, whether Hargrave and Ed Scott should have trusted you at that point, whether you truly have your finger on the pulse when it comes to the president, you know, Memphis probably should have questioned that. If this is the way that it went, and it's Yormark that said it, but yeah, man, not a deal where he intentionally misled this school. No, there'd be no motive for that. A deal where he is not nearly as in touch with the presidents and the ADs of his schools as he thinks he is. And like Feinbaum, many are probably looking at him as a clown. That's how I could imagine this thing going. But again, that's all speculation. And for this, without Memphis sort of leaking its side of the story at some point, or just openly saying it, I mean, Ed was open with the Pac-12 stuff, we'll be left to speculate.
Long term, I actually think what happened this week isn't the worst thing. It hurts to get rejected. Being told no again by the Big 12, it stinks. Everybody got their jokes off in the first 24 hours of the news cycle when this story broke. But you know what? The rest of the country has kind of moved on at this point, and the jokes are done. I think the next time, whenever that next time is, or in the future, on the whole, what Memphis has done this week, or what came to light this week, actually shows like how serious they are and how capable they are of being competitive financially moving forward in this new era of college athletics, to a degree that I don't think the public and certainly commissioners and university presidents maybe fully grasped prior to that story coming out.
Maybe so, and maybe the North Carolinas of the world and those bigger folks, hey, Memphis, hey, look what they're bringing to the table. We can bring more to the table than that. Maybe we got to make our move. What I think it does, Cobb, is exposes the sort of hypocrisy of a ton of this. Because, again, what I would point to, and it's something Feinbaum said, SMU, who he labeled as the most corrupt football program we've ever seen, the program that had to be shut down in the 80s, is able to buy its way into the ACC. SMU with its polos, with its deep pockets, but that was once the rogue program that nobody in college football wanted to even talk about anymore, able to buy its way in. Memphis, with an offer that you can make a case is better. While it's not deferring payments for 9 years like SMU was doing with the ACC, it is doing it for 5. It's saying you can kick us out. And, oh, by the way, here's $200 to $250 million, depending upon whichever report you're putting out there. I think McMurphy went up to 250. Whatever it is, here's that in sponsorships that we're going to throw all over everything in the Big 12. And they wouldn't take your money, Cobb. In fact, they wouldn't even vote on it. It's they'll take you their money. But your money's not good enough. It would be the equivalent of, let's just say, if Memphis was a black family, right, trying to move into an upper-class white neighborhood. And I can already feel folks rolling their eyes, but listen to this. You've got a good job. you've got the same money as everybody in the neighborhood in this case. You're saying your rev share is going to be 20 and a half. And yet they won't even look at your application because of how you look, because of your market, because of what Stephen A. Smith was just saying about you. That's what has been exposed, I think, in this. This, you know, Memphis's money can't buy its way in, but SMU's can.
Jason, we really appreciate it, my man.
Y'all take care.
That is Jason Smith of the Jason and John Show. When we come back, we have got a doozy of a Tell Your Story. Let's just say it's tremendous. We'll discuss that when we come back right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Cobb. For today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story, we got an official release from the White House. Fact sheet. President Donald J. Trump saves college sports. Today, President Donald J. Trump signed an executive order to protect the student athletes and collegiate athletic scholarships and opportunities, including Olympics and non-revenue programs and the unique institution of college sports. When you read the whole fact sheet, Cobb, it's literally just the House settlement.
But rest assured, Jeffrey, college sports has been saved.
There's just something really funny to me about fact sheet, colon, then an opinion. This is the definition of tell your story.
There's never been a better one.
I mean, forget your political leanings. It's always entertaining.
Donald J. Trump saves college sports here on July
24th, 2005. Not to be confused with his father. His father was a great man, but Donald J. Trump's the one who saved it.
Saved it with a fact sheet.
With a fact sheet. All right, my man. Appreciate you being with us.
Yeah, thank you.
That, of course, is David Cobb. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. Want to thank also Eric Hasenstein and Jason Smith for joining the program. For George, for Cobb, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It's a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Listen and follow Jill on Money on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.